Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast at Burn Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burnorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Maybe you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's compensating for his Texas baseball woes by wearing a Houston Astros shirt, Cal Carpenter. Cal, how are you?
I didn't even realize. Yeah, I guess I subconsciously was yearning for baseball that wins. We'll get into it. We'll talk about how we warned a little bit of some of this in our preview. If you missed that episode and you start this one off with the lamentations of the baseball team, go back and listen to our preview. There are some good things to look forward to after what was a tough of an opening weekend. But I mean, all in all, you scratch a little rough baseball weekend. We have a lot of good things to talk about. Pretty good week for the Longhorns across the board, outside of course, a rough one there in Arlington. But Gerald, just good to see you.
It's good to be seen, Kyle. You know, I'm on the road for work. This is like my last road trip for the foreseeable future. So I love traveling and getting to connect with people, but I also love my own bed, which is a thing, right? So I'm actually coming to you from the Pacific time zone. I'll be back in Central time by the time any of you listen to this. But as we record, I'm in Pacific time. We're not here to talk about that. We do want to open up the show and acknowledge longtime Texas fan and booster Red McCombs passed away Monday at the age of 95. He is one of the largest big money donors, air quotes, that Texas has had in quite a long time, and was a massive booster. The softball field bears his name and his wife's name. They're massively invested in the university. Was an ambassador for him. Controversial figure in some ways, but cannot deny the impact he's had on the university.
Yeah, I have a degree with his name on it, right? The McComb School of Business is obviously named for Red and Charlene and the donations they made. While at times there were some things I disagreed with some of his views, you can't disagree with his love for the University of Texas. And Gerald is two San Antonio boys, also the driving force he was in bringing the Spurs to San Antonio, the longtime owner of that franchise as well. So a lot of my sports interest can directly be traced back to Red McCombs' money. So for that, we'll always be thankful, Red, for your interest in sport and good taste and teams to follow in the Longhorns and Spurs.
He never was able to get his NFL team in San Antonio, but that's Jerry Jones's fault, and I'll hate him forever for that. But teams that do play in Arlington, or teams that did play in Arlington, Texas, 0-3 at the College Baseball Showdown at Globe Life Field. We said it during our preview podcast. Kyle alluded to it. We'd know a lot about what Texas would be based upon this weekend. And Kyle, it seems like Texas is in a rebuild, And we anticipated that. You lose eight guys to the MLB draft plus three transfers out. Like, that's a starting lineup. So we knew that this was going to be a bit of a rough patch for Texas. But running it down, lost to Arkansas in a tight one, 3-2 on Friday. Got walked off by Missouri on Saturday, 6-5. And then just got absolutely housed by Vandy, who Vandy is clearly one of the probably six favorites to win. Like, if there's a field of six teams that you're like, this, I'd feel comfortable putting money on them, Vandy is one of them, right? So Vandy absolutely housed Texas. Texas did itself no favors in that game. But we knew what we said it in the preview, right? This was going to be a rebuild year for Texas. A lot of new faces, a lot of new guys needing to contribute. And part of the issue with that is that sometimes it takes them a minute to get up to speed. And I think we saw that this weekend in Arlington.
Yeah, I mean, Vandy for sure a top 10 team. Tennessee was number three coming in. We know how good they were last year. They went 1-2, so nothing is guaranteed, right? Even Arkansas, who's very good, went 2-1 this weekend. We know that. The beginning of the year is always interesting. You're figuring things out. Look, there were positives to take away from this weekend. That Arkansas game I thought was a great game, and when Lucas Gordon was on the mound, that looked like the team we're going to see, you know, for most of the year. He threw five scoreless innings, struck out six, only one walk, just two hits in five, retired the last eight batters he faced, basically left it in a good spot. LeBaron Johnson came in. He was credited with the loss. He gave up all three runs. Basically, both teams scored all their runs in the seventh. To the long run's credit, right? They gave up three in the top, scored two in the bottom, and you thought, okay, they got some fight. Can they get that next run? Can they get a fourth run? Because, look, Texas came in, and Andre Duplantier pitched two scoreless and hitless innings in relief, three strikeouts to close out the game. So it was there for them to take. They just weren't able to get the answer. They did have the Porter Brown solo shot, and Garrett Gement scored after he doubled. So they did some things, just couldn't get that last bit at the end. But, you know, again, Arkansas, a very good team, and Texas looked like they belonged on the field with them. The walk-off to Mizzou was tough, and you started to see the cracks a little bit during that game that would show up in the Vandy game. You know, we said it in our preview that this team kind of goes as far as Zane Morehouse goes as our second starter. His ceiling is, you know, one of the better pitchers in the Big 12, like easily some of his stuff. It's just a control, and sometimes the ball hangs on him and he gives up home runs, and you know that can happen. He pitched four innings, got four runs, three of them earned on eight hits. But again, finished on a high note, back-to-back scoreless innings, four strikeouts in his last two innings. So you see where that talent is there, but gave up a little bit early. You know, again, to their credit, Texas down 4-1 after, you know, they gave up a couple of those hits on some errors in the second, which is, again, I think the concern and the bigger takeaway of the weekend. But you saw freshman Jaden Duplantier, the other Duplantier, both had a good weekend, a.k.a. Gumbo Salad on social media, which is one of my favorite handles on social media that exists. Just an unbelievable name. But the freshman got his first career hit, and it was a two-run or two RBI ground rule double, right? So the Duplantiers are deplanting the flag that they're going to be a big part of the team this year. That's right. Yeah, that's
all
right.
All out.
Thank you. But, you know, again, Mizzou got a couple hits in that you know, bottom of the ninth, basically put one down third where the freshman was probably playing a little bit too far off the line, got past him, and then Porter Brown, ball got stuck in the corner of a, you know, major league outfield. You know, the game's on the line. Tough play. Didn't make it. They you know, ran around, scored at play at the plate and walked it off, right? Tough loss. Again, one run loss. That's tough. Vandy was wild, right? They went down 8-0 in the second due to four errors in that inning. Gerald, I have a little bit of a math problem for you. I know none of us said we're graduates of the University of Texas Math School, but I'm going to give you a stat line and you tell me what you think the ERA might be here. So three innings pitched for Travis Staley, five hits, eight runs allowed, no walks, two strikeouts. What do you think that person's ERA will be the next time he pitches, if he does indeed remain the Sunday starter for the Longhorns?
Oh my gosh, I have no clue. It's got to be astronomical though.
Three innings, eight runs allowed. It will be 0.00 because all eight of those runs were unearned, which is crazy. I haven't seen that since Little Leagues. Like, that's nuts. He will have a 0.00 ERA. So, like, again, you pinpoint in right there on what the issue is, and we said it in our preview, like they went from being elite. Last year, they were the best in the country, literally. They were the best in the country at defense. Trey Faltini, the best defensive shortstop. Messenger was an ace on third base. Like, there was no reason Ivan Melendez should have been as good a defensive first baseman as he was. Mitchell Daly, because he didn't have to play short, could be, you know, one of the better defensive second basemen in the country. They had that incredible double play machine between the two of them. Hodo just mowed things down in center field. Like, all that's gone, right? You also lost Silas Ardwin, you know, probably the best defensive catcher in the country last year. That's a lot of defense to replace, especially we talked about freshmen on the hot corners, talked about, you know, Jack O'Dowd, who's a little bit of a step slower going to second base so that Daly can go to short. Can Daly be as good as Faltini? Can, you know, Porter Brown, who's fast, can he be the outfielder that, you know, we needed with Kennedy moving into center field to take over for Hodo? Like, a lot of questions. Unfortunately, from three games, small sample size, maybe not the answer that we were looking for.
There's two sides to this coin, right? Like, can you expect Texas to literally be the record-setting defense year in and year out? No, right? That's an unfair expectation. They basically had a 99% fielding percentage, right? 98.5 or 985 in the field, right? Because baseball likes to do stats weird like that. But, like, there is zero way to expect that from Texas. But you also don't expect them to be terrible, which is what we saw on Sunday, right? The defense, specifically the shortstop connection, was terrible. Like, there's no two ways around it. And I'm not trying to call the kid out, but, like, I feel like Coach Pierce probably said worse is what I'll say, right?
Sure.
Like, it was not like a couple of booted plays by shortstop led to 8 runs in that inning. There's no two ways around saying that. And that's really where, like, the game just got away. When that game starts to snowball, that snowball picked up speed really, really quickly. There are already, like there were last year, people wanting to move on from Coach Pierce. And I think that's, one, not going to happen because baseball operated at a loss last year and Coach Pierce got an extension. So, like, he's probably not going anywhere for a while unless, I don't know, Red McCombs left a big buyout budget in his will for Texas. But, like, for Texas fans, I think we have to understand that, like, two things can exist, or multiple things can exist at the same time, right? Like, am I disappointed by this outing? Yes. Are there reasons why this is happening? Yes. Am I upset that maybe Pierce wasn't as aggressive in the transfer portal as he should have been? Yes. Is this his strategy to hopefully build some young depth rather than having to go to the transfer portal every year? Yes. All four of those things can be true at the same time. And I think we're going to have to live that year, because potentially next year they're going to be back again, not to record-setting pace, but you're going to have to deal with one of two problems, right? Either you have to reload from the transfer portal every year, or you have a bump in the road year like this, and you let your young guys get the hiccups out, get the bad plays out, and then you have some upperclassmen. And the way to get old in baseball, in any sport really, is one of two ways. Either you play young guys and they struggle as young guys, or you build it by transfer. And I am of the mind that I think specifically in baseball, I'm fine with having a year that's a third place in the conference year, right? Potentially. Maybe add one or two more portal guys, but, like, not rebuilding the entire thing out of portal guys to allow this team to have some depth.
I think that's a great call to action for the fans, Gerald, is give a little patience. Also, we said it. This would be some of their toughest games, non-conference, of the entire season. Like, I could legitimately see them going 13-3 over their next 16 and getting the hype all the way back up, because they're going to be better than everyone else they face. Doesn't mean they will win every game. But, you know, they could put together a good little stretch before they head into conference and have the wheels turning. And again, they're getting more reps, more rhythm, more repetition. One thing to take away, again, it's a weird one, with Staley having 3 innings and a 0 ERA, even though he gave up 8 runs. But we have 2 starting pitchers with us taking a 0-0 ERA into their next start, right? Duplantier came in and pitched 2 innings, gave up no runs. Chase Loomis threw 2 innings in relief across multiple games and gave up 0 runs. David Shaw, who put his first stake down as maybe a potential closer type arm, he came in the last inning of 2 games and threw, you know, scoreless innings in both, right? So 2 scoreless innings. Shaw is the Rice transfer. Heston Toll is the Arkansas transfer, came in through 1 scoreless inning. So it's like there were arms who were working, right? I think there were guys who you can have some good takeaways. It's you didn't see a lot of the young arms. Pierce clearly wanted to lean on transfers in the pitching, people who'd seen some Division One, because it's a big step up. It's a big step up for pitchers. It's a huge step up for you know, defenders, for fielders, for batters, the whole thing. You saw the offensive side and the defensive side both. There were a lot of plays forced on either people in a new position first time or true freshmen in college at the first time. So again, it was warts and all, but they lost two of those games against good teams on one run. You know, they were close games. I think all the errors and the big loss to a good Vandy team definitely left a taste in the mouth. But say they win one of those and they go 1-2, it's still not what we want as Texas fans, but you can understand the growing pain. So can they quickly, you know, recover from this will be the question, and can we see you know, some big time improvement over the next month or two?
In that vein of quick recovery, Texas returns home to Austin to for its home opener at the Dish against A&M Corpus Christi this Tuesday. So the day you're listening to this, they'll be in action kicking off the season at home. It didn't need to be this tough, didn't need to be this tight, but number 6 men's basketball beats OU 85-83 in overtime to extend the University of Texas's win streak over the Oklahoma Sooners to 9 games across all sports. 9-0 against OU this academic year. Feels good, Kyle, doesn't it?
It does not feel bad. I'll say this. Look, I think we cut this off at 10 and we just don't count them anymore after that, because if they can win, we'll talk about the next game they play is against the women's basketball team. We'll talk about in a moment, which is, you know, for bragging rights and more. If they can win that one and go 10-0, it's great. And then we don't even have to count softball. We'll just call it over, and Texas will you know, have a clean sweep. Again, softball, OU looks very good. But keeping it on the basketball court, this was, you're right, Gerald. I think you said it correctly. This was way harder than it needed to be. It was way more stressful than it should have been. Texas, multiple times during this game, looked like they didn't want to win it. And then, hey, you know, Sir Jabari Rice is here. And hey, I've only been a Longhorn for a few months, but I already don't like losing to Oklahoma. And he carried this team a couple different times. So
the spirit of Andrew Jones possessed him.
It was beautiful. You're absolutely right. It was beautiful. That is actually, I think, what happened. We are not necessarily in the spirits and seance business, but if you're interested in such a thing, you can find any of our new podcasts, not on the Vox Media Network, including the Spirits and Seance podcast. No, I kid. We didn't need spirits. We didn't need a hex. We didn't need nothing. We just needed good old-fashioned, last it out, you're the better team, make a couple plays, squeaky bum time, and you get to the end with a W over OU, which is big, right? Like we said it, just win your home ones. Keep yourself in play to win the conference and for, you know, in theory, then a number one seed. This was the first step. It was a lot closer than we would have wished. Probably this was our easiest of the home games, but nonetheless, they started it out, won it. Can they, you know, do something on the road? We'll see. Can they keep this up against probably better teams at home? Sure, we'll see. But OU is no bum, right? Like, it's a tough conference, and they belong in the conversation of a tournament team. So good win. Even if it was way, way more stressful than it should have been.
If you want to get in on our new podcast that we're launching and do a segment called Too Hexy for the 40, we'd love to have you on. But no, like, this did not need to be as dramatic. Like, Texas missed 3 straight shots in the end of regulation. OU hit like a crazy 3. Marcus Carr had easily the worst possession I've seen in a very long time to set up one of the worst shots I've seen from him in a very long time. That sent it to overtime, right? Then Texas took over early in overtime and kind of cruised. Like, it got a little squeakier at the end, right? Texas was up by 8. Things were rallying. The corral was hopping. And then OU kind of went on a little run. Basketball is a game of runs. A couple of extra free throws here and there. A couple of extra open looks go down here and there. And this is a much different game, right? Texas won ugly, and that's good. And does this game go that way in Norman? Probably not, but they didn't play it in Norman. They played it in Austin. But like you mentioned, SJ Rice dropped 24, half of which came from three-point range. Like, if he's doing that, no matter how well the other team plays, very few teams are going to beat them. On top of that, Marcus Carr chipped 17 on a night where he was 0 for 7 from three-point range, right? Two of those drop, right? You go, he has a bad night instead of the worst night, and Texas wins this by 6 points in regulation. He also chipped in six rebounds and four assists to hit 700 for his career for assists, right? There was a lot left on the table for Texas, and they still managed to beat their rival. You can't be mad about that.
Timmy Allen got 15 and 9 rebounds, like doing the things to win games like he does. I mean, we've said it. There is, as much as we maybe didn't picture this being the exact makeup, there is kind of a big three right now for Texas basketball, with Marcus Carr and Serge Ibari Rice being the for sure two. And Timmy Allen in Big 12 play has certainly made the stake that he's the third in that. And again, you know, I still feel like my blind faith that there's a Tyrese Hunter game towards the end of the season, or even in postseason when he seems to play his best basketball, where he can play like what we expected to be probably the second or third best player on this team. I think there is a Christian Bishop or Dylan Dessou game still left in this season, right, where the big men can make an impact, and they'll need to against some teams with some great bigs. So, but we do seem to have that solidified big three right now, and there's so much experience between Carr, Rice, and Allen that, you know, I feel confident if that's the core of your team as you get ready to make a run. In Texas, you know, the Illinois game aside, where they had a rough end with the free throws that they didn't make and then a loss in overtime, they have been very, very good in close games and found a way to win them and kind of hold out. I think seven times this year they have won less than 5 point games. So they are...
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
They're good when it's close, and you have to give credit all the way top to bottom. It's player-led as well as Coach Terry stepping in and you know, getting the team right, especially in second halves.
So next up for Texas, they're at home Tuesday against Iowa State and then Baylor on Saturday. After that, two more in conference. The season is coming to a close. On the ladies' side, number 17, women's basketball continues to surge in conference play, absolutely demolishes West Virginia 74-48. Texas outscored West Virginia 50-29 in the odd-numbered quarter, setting themselves up for a massive run. Shea Gonzalez led the charge with 18-4. Rory Harmon did her part with 16, 6 assists, and 6 rebounds.
Ida Faye also, you have to give a shout out to her in this one, a double-double with 12 points and 11 rebounds. She had 10 points and 7 rebounds in that big first quarter run alone. They came out of both halves and just set the tone, and, you know, 50-29, like Gerald said, just really set a tone that this is not one of those games that West Virginia is going to do something wonky and Texas is just going to, you know, get out early and breeze to a victory. The other bigs, Deanna Gass and Taylor Jones, had 7 points apiece, 9 rebounds for Gass and 6 rebounds for Taylor Jones. Let's go with 3 blocks. So a shared effort in the paint across the three bigs and then, you know, the two guards that we're used to seeing. So Texas, they play defense, they win. We know that. They are now, I believe it's 17-0 when they give up less than 59 points. So you know the formula. You just got to go out and do it for Vic.
Texas hopes to continue to do it. They have the formula, but they've got to go to Norman this weekend, Saturday, to take on OU. They're tied. These two teams, basically this game will likely determine who wins the conference regular season title. So, massive game for the ladies, and you can catch that on Saturday from Norman. Well, now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. Number 9, softball. Got its first two run rules of the season. They're currently at right about 9% of last year's total. They had 11 last year, 2 already through the first two games. Won their opener against Lamar 8-2. They went 5-0 at the Texas Classic to improve to 8-1-1 on the year, including those two run rules. Absolutely massive week and weekend for the ladies.
Yeah, the last of those games against UIW, probably the class of the bunch. They went 8-0 in five innings. Arizona straight transfer Mac Morgan threw her first complete game. Shutout also beat Oklahoma 9-1 in five innings. They had two close ones against Omaha 7-6 and against Loyola Chicago 6-5, where you know they had to play all the way out and every at bat mattered. So you love to see kind of the difference in one tournament. If you get the blowouts, you feel comfortable, but you also get those challenges that will certainly pay off later in the season. A couple players to spotlight: freshman Leanne Good, starting out on fire, a true freshman, the number 17 player in the country from O'Connor in San Antonio, has now set a Texas program record with a 10-game hitting streak to start her career. She broke it in game 9, where Janae Jefferson was present. She set the record with 8. And Jefferson was throwing out the first pitch on Saturday and had to watch her record get broke. But she seemed to be tweeting that she was thrilled for Leanne. Had 4-for-4 performance in there. She basically right now is leading the Big 12 with a .576 average and 4 doubles and 2 triples, which her first career hit was a triple. She really announced herself. She has 4 steals and just, you know, is looking like Janae Jefferson, kind of direct replacement, which we never would have thought, especially from a freshman. I mean, she is looking like the real deal. Maybe, you know, a lot of the preseason stuff went to Mia Scott, who herself has been phenomenal in the start. But I don't know if anyone thought Leanne Good would come in and be this good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we did, but I'm glad she is. Like you mentioned, Mia Scott currently sits second in the Big 12 in hits, first in stolen bases, and second in runs batted in. So a big outing for her. In the spirit of freshmen doing big things, freshman Sitlali Gutierrez picked up her first career win against Lamar. She was the number 36 player in the 2023 class from 2A Stanford. Had a rough outing against Northwestern, but got her groove back in the home opener on Wednesday. For his trouble, Coach Mike White got his 600th career win, 165 of that coming at Texas. Next up for the ladies, hosting number 8 Virginia Tech, Abilene Christian, and Texas Southern for the Lone Star Invitational this weekend at McCombs Field. Number 7 men's tennis, right? Number 7 men's tennis reaches its first ITA indoors final in program history, finished second place after sweeping Wake Forest and getting a revenge match against Ohio State 4-3. They beat number 4 Michigan for their run, but then fell to, unfortunately, TCU in the championship.
Yeah, a couple players just stood out in this one. Spazieri was great, as we would expect, against Michigan, beat number 7 against Ohio State, got a good win. You know, I thought Micah Braswell, who's back with the team, is kind of getting in form, beat a top 10 player in singles during this against Ohio State. I just thought in general the team looked great up to the TCU match, which was tough. Spazieri was leading his, but it finished unfinished before he could get a chance. But otherwise, TCU just looked to be the superior team, which will be an interesting thing to call back to when they get to Big 12. TCU has been building quite a program in the past couple of years. But we mentioned it, that the Ohio State, the number one team, they beat Texas early on. They were the favorite to win this, but it is a bit of a rivalry. And I think, if I recall, I said, let's hope they meet in the ITA indoors and Texas gets their revenge. Well, indeed, revenge they got, because Ohio State had to watch Texas play, even though they didn't win it in the championship. So good momentum, nonetheless, finishing runner-up, heading into the outdoor season.
We're excited for the outdoor season. Texas hopes to get some more Director's Cup points and potentially another championship in the outdoor season. Number 4 track breaks the DMR indoor program record in its opening race of the season at Notre Dame. Cruz Gomez, Jonathan Jones, Yusef Bismana, and Creighton Carroza broke a record that has only stood for 2 years, right? But the big thing, 11 broken records this season by the track team.
Creighton Carroza has 3 of those in the past few weeks at both the mile and the 800 in Boston, 2 different events in Boston a couple weeks ago. One, I think, was 3 weeks, and one, the other was last week. But nonetheless, they are getting some good momentum heading into the Big 12 indoors coming up this week in Lubbock. So it's a good exclamation there for the DMR kind of distance medley team there. Texas looks stacked pretty across the board. They're a top 5 team for a reason, and they, you know, they have jumpers, they have distance, especially middle distance, where they haven't necessarily been as elite as they look right now. So they're just breaking records. They're looking good, both men's and women's. Women's still number one in the latest poll. So indoors coming at a good time. Let's see if they can defend some championships.
That would be third straight for Texas if they win this weekend. Speaking of competing for consecutive conference championships this weekend, swimming will be taking place starting Tuesday, running through Sunday in Austin, looking for their infinite consecutive Big 12 championship. I don't know when the last time another team in the Big 12 won it, but I don't know if it's ever happened.
I legitimately don't think they've ever lost a Big 12 championship, at least on the men's side. So I'll confirm that. When we talk about next week, this win, I will have that stat confirmed by then for sure. Gerald, let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. A fun little social media moment when you had the large and handsome assemblage of gentlemen with long hair. Not everyone. The older gentleman did not have the longer hair, but the Doak Walker ceremony was this weekend, where Bijan was awarded, officially got his trophy and his laurels. And I follow SID Bianco, so I saw him posting live kind of as it was going in, but his photos were a little blurry. So when the official photos came out, they looked much better. But it was an impressive group of Earl Campbell, Ricky Williams, Dante Foreman, as well as Bijan Robinson.
Rest in peace, Cedric Benson, the one missing from that photo. He won the Doak in 2004. They also had to get some better lighting on Ricky. Ricky looked like a shadow in a couple of those pictures, so like, it's fun.
Gerald, this is right up your wheelhouse. One of your all-time favorites, Ryan Krauser, set a new world record in the shot put. He threw it 23.37 meters, which I always like to translate to feet because that's a lot of meters. But it's even more when you think in the American standard of 76 and a half feet and some change that he threw a heavy metallic object. My shoulder hurts just reading that sentence.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If you're talking about biggest athletes at the next level for Texas, Ryan Krauser has to be in the conversation.
Speaking of big achievers on the track and or field, Tara Davis Woodhull, to use her entire and correct name now that she has officially been married, won the USA indoors with a long jump of just under 7 meters, 6.99 meters. That, again, in feet is just under 23 feet. Her indoor personal best is the leading jump in the world this year and puts her in the top five all-time American jumps. Coach Rodney Terry was named one of the 15 finalists on the Naismith Men's Coach of the Year late season watch list. Just a really incredible story. I know awards like a story. Coming in on December 12th, he's guided them to a 13-5 mark, including three top 20 wins. They've been great. I mean, we talked about it. They're good in close games. They win against big teams. They, you know, this is a really good program right now, and sometimes we forget, they have every reason not to be.
Yeah, I anticipated this being a season of, what if, right? What if Chris Beard hadn't been one of the three biggest idiots, regardless of whether or not the charges were dropped? That doesn't mean he's innocent. That just means that they couldn't get somebody to testify, right? What if Chris, I anticipated it being a what if year, and there's still a little bit of what if to it, but I think the fact that they've got the second most quad one wins in the country, right? And they have seen, we saw that early shakiness when Rodney Terry took over, but they've really hit their stride under Coach Terry, and yes, the need for second half comebacks is doing terrible things to my heart rate. But when push comes to shove, they're winning games. And when we look back at the season, we're not going to remember that they were close wins. We're going to remember that an interim Rodney Terry got them wins.
And it is no fluke, right? They, like you said, the second half thing is too big to not be a trend at this point, but they have a different identity. Their defense went from being a top five defense to still good. I think they're somewhere around 40, 39 in adjusted defense, which is still very good. But their offense took many steps forward. And that, again, doesn't seem like a fluke to me when Terry came and put his stamp on it. It does feel like the offense is now a more explosive and high-performing unit. Again, oftentimes steps up in one or steps down in the other. Those you basically decide where to spend your XP points. And Beard spent them all on defense. That was his philosophy. But you're seeing something different under Terry as he makes his case, to be the head coach at the University of Texas or elsewhere, but basically puts together this audition tape. You are seeing his influence without a doubt. But keeping it on the hoops, we have two bits of news, one for a current Longhorn and one for a soon-to-be Longhorn. Men's basketball signee Ron Holland was named one of the five finalists for the Naismith High School Boys Player of the Year, and another player who looks at Ron Holland and says, "I keep getting older, but the kids stay the same age." Brock Cunningham, going for his PhD in basketball and vibes, announced he's coming back for his sixth season. Gerald, thoughts on those two pieces of news?
Proctor Quinn, medicine glue man, is going to have his PhD by the time he leaves. It's really impressive. I mean, legitimately, if you can get a full degree and a full MBA from McCombs while playing basketball and staying in shape and going to school for free, like, what more power to you. Ron Holland, I'm glad he has stuck around. I think his family is still monitoring the situation closely, but getting to the point where I think he might end up just sticking, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I love both of those guys on the team next year, especially because there will be an exodus with those guys we talked about, with Timmy Allen unfortunately not having any more, Marcus Carr, Serge Ibari Rice all exhausting their eligibility. Well, Brock Cunningham is going to be the glue for this and probably the next three or four recruiting classes. So just excited.
Can he go for 10?
To see both of can we get a Perry Ellis on our hands here?
Four more years.
Besides Eldon basketball players, what have you been watching on your giant screen? Let's take it on a little bit of Godzilla-tron.
Wasn't a big streaming weekend for us. My oldest turned 6, and we did the Chuck E. Cheese thing, which was great. He had a great time. We watched that rat dance for a little while, so that was fun. Shrinking continues to be great. You all should be watching it. For Family Night, Pizza Night, Movie Night this week, we watched the original Ice Age, and the animation doesn't quite hold up, but the story and the voice acting definitely does, so still definitely worth the watch. And then I am finally diving back in on the third book of the Mistborn trilogy, Hero of Ages. Took a little bit to get going, like some fantasy books do, but once it did, I'm really, really enjoying it. But I love it. I think Brandon Sanderson does really great work, and there's a reason why he's like he's the most prolific and sought after fantasy writer in the world right now. Big fan of his work.
Love that. I just had the conversation about getting back on the Apple TV game, and Shrinking is one of the driving factors. Like, my wife had something she wanted to watch as well. But as soon as that happens, Gerald, I'll jump on the train with you. Gerald, a train that requires no jumping, because we all never left. I watched classic piece of American cinema, December 11th, 1991. I would have said 92, 93, but okay, 1991 technically. Cinematic masterpiece, Hook. Gerald, when you talk about things not necessarily holding up, but also kind of holding up, Hook. There's some plot holes. There were some things in storytelling that we gave more grace to, almost 30 years ago, which is crazy to say. But I honestly hadn't seen this movie at least a decade, two decades, like legitimately. I think I'd seen it since before it first came out when I was a young kid, but it had been a long time. So much so that I remember reading that Dustin Hoffman played Captain Hook, and it blew my brain until the point when he gets his wig knocked off, and it's, Dustin Hoffman sans wig and his kind of shorter regular hair there, did it click. But there was like 20 different times in the film when I just like leaned in and was like, that is Dustin Hoffman playing Hook. What a character he did. Robin Williams, obviously, all-time legend. I mean, I think a lot of our generation and generations around it, this is how they actually know the Peter Pan story. I don't know if they've all seen the original Disney, and I think you have to, because there were some plot holes that if you haven't watched it, you forget a little bit about the crocodile and some of the things, why.
The marbles.
Exactly, the marbles. Yeah, for sure. Exactly. It was like, the sets were unbelievable, like lavishly done. You could tell it was a Spielberg Disney. There was no, budget that could, be denied. Like, John Williams on the music. Like, it was It was a great hang. Like, not a great movie, but an incredible hang. Like, I would watch Hook, and actually my wife fell asleep, so I did watch it a second time all the way through. I would watch Hook once a year, once every 2 years at worst. It was not bad. I loved it. And again, I love Robin Williams, so it's, you know, it's a soft spot there. But nothing negative to say about Hook.
You've got, obviously, Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman, Julia Roberts, Bob Hoskins, Dame Maggie Smith, Dante Bosco, right? Like, and if you don't follow Dante Bosco or, like, know who he is, he was guy who played Rufio, went on to, like, not be that big of an actor, like, overall, but became a really prolific voice actor towards the latter stages of his career, voiced Prince Zuko on Avatar The Last Airbender, which is just incredible and absolutely crushed it. Like, love it. Big fan of his.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had this exact conversation because my wife couldn't believe she looked up how old he is, that he's 47. There was a TikTok of him. There's some filter going around that apparently you put
in. Teen filter. To make you,
yeah, so she showed me that after we'd watched Hook, and it blew both of our minds because it was Rufio. The teen filter made him look better than anyone I've seen, like their, and I guess we know his childhood self. But it was also crazy to see that man is 47. I think we've talked about it in this podcast that they made a I think crowdfunded a like Lost Boys sequel, alternate universe type of film, I think called Bangarang, or, you know, anyways, I'll have to figure some more out on that because I'll probably be watching Bangarang next. But yeah, it the cast's ridiculous. I was blown away that Dame Maggie Smith was like in her 60s when that film came out. Like, how has this woman been old? My entire lifetime, she's been old and crushing it. You know, she makes Downton Abbey, but yeah. Anyways, all right, that's enough Hook deep dives, but it's great. You should watch it. Gerald, that's it for Godzilla-tron.
And that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
You know, I'm very excited that football's back. And you ask, wait a minute, football just ended. Oh, boy, not all of it. We have a couple weeks until a spring game. Spring practice just started for the Longhorn football team. But there are Longhorns playing football currently. The XFL, featuring many former Longhorns, and I'm going to focus specifically on one of them. There is Jacoby Jones, Holton Hill were both drafted in the XFL draft. I think Hill's on the DC Defenders, and I don't remember exactly where, but unimportant. But the one that I wanted to focus on is Ben Davis. Remember Ben Davis, Longhorn linebacker? He actually is the captain of the San Antonio team, which, you know, I'm in on a San Antonio team. And the San Antonio team is the Brahmas, not for the MacArthur High School, if you're a San Antonio listener, but because Dwayne The Rock Johnson owns the San Antonio team. So he just used his Brahma logo as their logo. They announced this week also that the XFL championship game will be played in San Antonio. San Antonio had the other league team last USFL? Year. Yeah, exactly. The USFL San Antonio team had the highest attendance rates in the league. San Antonio is star for football. This is the reason the Cowboys held their camps there for many years. It's the reason, like Gerald said, that Red McCombs could never get a team in because Jerry Jones feared that half their fans would leave if San Antonio ever got their own team. But so they have their team now. This is a professional team, not the NFL, but a professional league. And San Antonio fans are showing out. And it is a Longhorn who is leading the team out of the tunnel. Ben Davis, a man who came from Alabama, made his way to Texas, just never really lived up to all the potential in either place that we thought he could be, is now quickly asserting himself in the new league. And I, for one, will be rooting both for the San Antonio Brahmas as well as former Longhorn Ben Davis.
You and me both. So I'm making the drum this week on Chris Del Conte's town hall. If you missed it, he does this kind of annual town hall or kind of semi-annual town halls where he speaks with fans and kind of addresses questions and things like that. And somebody asked about alternate jerseys and he said, God made the sunsets burn orange for a reason, right? Great line. But the thing that I think loved about it, and it speaks to me specifically in my context, is that one of the first changes that Chris Del Conte made as he tried to improve the game day experience at DKR was address the food prices and having the happy hour prices at several games. And he went on record and said that right now bottles of water are $3 and I wish we could get them down to $2. And that to me just speaks to, of all the things that people want to slight him for, like, knowing that the fan experience is paramount and is the reason why the University of Texas will continue to be successful. As a father of three who wants to take his children to as many athletic events on the 40 acres as he can, being able to take my kids to a game and say, yeah, we can get a drink and some popcorn and not have to take out a second mortgage is massive to me. And I think it, again, speaks to whatever thoughts you may have about Chris Del Conte and hires or coaching decisions. He gets what makes athletic departments run, and it's getting fans in the seats and giving fans a first-class experience. And so I'm glad that he's taking that mindset, and I applaud him for it, and I think we all should.
Del Conte's amazing. We all remember the Mac Brown, you know, arriving press conference, the come early, stay late, wear orange, be loud comment. Del Conte has had a lot of zingers and one-liners and great things in his statements since. But ultimately, I think, you know, the Texas Longhorn sports dominance that we've had over the past few years is only, you know, not only, but it is certainly one, a dedication from the athletic director and the entire university to invest across all sports, and two, it is the fans getting out there and supporting and giving true home court advantage. We've seen for both the men's and women's team, I think, you know, I think it's something like 24 straight games across the two teams. The Moody has not seen a loss in over 20 games. There's only been two losses all year in the Mood. So yeah, I mean, the fans matter. This is incredible that we're seeing this. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Love Del Conte, love what they're doing. Just wanted to throw an addendum, Gerald, that I forgot to say. Both Hines Ward, the head coach, and Joey Porter, the linebackers coach of the Brahma. So if you're not on board, get on board quickly while there's still room on the bandwagon.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week for our final show on the Burnt Orange Nation podcast feed. We'll have a bunch of updates for you there as well about our future and where we're going to go. Don't worry. All good news. We're excited to share it with you. And until then, hook 'em.
We ain't going nowhere.